Why are they shaking their heads? We're stuck in slow life. Is it the beating of the chest that makes us feel the rest? Good day, everyone. This is March Twisdale, producer and host of a brand new show here on Voice of Vashon called Focus On. Let me start by asking a question. Have you ever wondered what great ideas might be hiding just next door in another culture or country? Well, this is the show where I go out and find people from other places in the world who want to share their views. Today, I'll be talking with Johannes.
Johannes.
Okay. And last name?
Benediktsson.
Johannes is one of 8 guest writers from Iceland who will be joining me during the first 4 months of Focus On, which is recorded in the studios of Voice of Vashon and broadcast now. I have a new schedule, 11 a.m. on Sundays and also 5 p.m. on Fridays here in the Seattle area on 101.9 FM KVSH, or you can sign up for my podcast at my website, marchtwisdale.com. Thank you for joining us today. And now we're going to dive into the show. So, Johannes, can you please give us a sense of who you are and ground us a little bit in your background?
Yeah, sure. I'm from Iceland. I'm actually born in the US. I am 36 years old. So I'm born in the US, but I've lived my life in Iceland. Currently, I am the CEO of a publishing company. We publish like 5 or 6 magazines. I am the editor of one of them, and I have a private school. I've had it for 15 years or so. And, you know, I write for this and that, but, you know, define yourself by your jobs, you know, thing to do, but, you know, define yourself by, I don't know, your dream now.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's an interesting thing. You know, what would you, who are you, but not who are you, but who would you like to be?
That's now, a great that's point.
That's something, well, I could answer that, but.
It's a little scary though, isn't it, to dive into dreams?
It is. Yeah, sure. You would get philosophical. I don't know. I'm just asking you, you know, mm-hmm. What are your dreams?
Right. Well, Focus On is definitely one of them. I mean, I have spent so many years living in this huge country called America. So I was born here and stayed here. And yeah. I'm sort of an out of the box person. And what I want is for the people in my society to become comfortable looking at how our fellow humans in other places in the world are handling social issues in a way that might work better than what we're currently doing. So my dream is to sort of crack open minds a little bit and allow us to work together on a global level rather than so competitively.
That's a very beautiful idea. And you are like being on radio. That's a perfect spot for someone with that dream. But you should consider politics, I would say.
People say this to me a lot. And my reaction to that is, what did I do to you? I mean, because
yeah.
I do actually, I go down to Olympia, which is the state capital of Washington. And I spend a couple, 2 to 3 months every year engaged as an informed consent advocate. And I got to tell you, I admire the people who are willing to endure what it takes to be a politician. And I don't want to endure that.
Yeah, I completely agree with you there, you know. So, if let's say I was in politics, I do have strong opinions, but if I was in politics, I would probably cry myself to sleep every night.
Even in Iceland?
People are mean, you know,
and
they are, but look at the politicians, like, when you become a politician, everyone gets like a free card, you know, or, you know, a permission to talk about what a bad person you are, you know,
yeah,
trying to do your best. And
yeah,
that's not that job I fancy.
Yeah, no, you definitely put yourself out there with a huge, giant target on your back, on your chest, on your thighs, on your head, and people just stand around and feel free to throw things at you.
Exactly, but that is the culture around politics. It's definitely not something I like, but hey, the politicians, they are the ones who are making the change, and people in the media, obviously, they can make change as well.
Yeah, we have a laundry list here of awesome things we want to touch upon. Since we were just talking about politics, one of the things I was going to ask you about is, do you have any thoughts about this new party called the Pirate Party?
Well, I do have thoughts on them. The Pirate Party, their idea are quite fresh, and I believe that they are like their heart is in the right place, so I believe them to be honest. They truly want to do good.
And they're new, right?
Well,
Like they
they are new.
like in the
There
last
is one
2 years or so?
3 or 4 years.
Right.
No. They're older than 4 years because, maybe 4 or 5 years. But no. But the thing is that they are new, and being a new party means that you don't have any ties to lobbyists, and
Right.
that is definitely something that I think every society needs. Fresh party that doesn't owe anyone anything.
And I'm
And
asking
that is the
specifically because in the US, there's this weird thing going on where we have this two-party system, and the idea of a new party coming on the scene is like literally most people think it will never happen. And so it's fascinating to me the fluidity of your culture that, as you say, this new party can not only come on the scene, but in a matter of 5 years, be capturing a large number of seats in parliament and be gathering a lot of attention and interest. Whereas, the Independent Party or the Libertarian Party, they've been around for decades and they're nothing. They just don't even have any power in America at all after decades of effort. So what's that like living in a country where you have that fluidity or that ability for a new, fresh, unattached group to grow?
Well, it's inspiring, I think it's very healthy for a society to have a system like this, that one day someone can say, hey, this system, isn't good. I'm representing this point of view, and if you want to change it, you can vote for my party. Like happened in this election, we had a new party, and it's called Viðreisn, and well, they had some fresh ideas, and they got 11%, but at least 11% of the society went for them,
Yeah, that's huge.
and that is huge. And right now they are, they have no ties to anyone, and they are in the government. Another party called Bright Future, it's called. It is, like I said, it is healthy for the society to have new voices with new views, from time to time. And this happened 4 years ago in the city of Reykjavík. We had actually a comedian who ran for mayor, Jón Gnarr, he is called, and he said, I have a lot of promises, but I'm not gonna do any of the thing I'm talking about. And it was very honest about that.
Did he win?
And he won, yeah. And he destroyed it. And it
Oh
was beautiful.
my God.
But then at the end, he is a good guy, and his heart is beating, in correct way. He's like he wants to do just, and he wants to make the society better, or that at least was my interpretation of him. And he was the mayor for 4 years, completely unattached to any forces, and he just changed the city, and I would say that the city is better. Mm-hmm. You know, it was a cleanup.
Right.
A lot of things that happened over time and was just broken.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he could change it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and now do you feel like in America, it oftentimes politically feels sort of like warfare. Basically, you have two parties at war with each other, and there's this idea that they will cross the aisle and work together, which is becoming less and less promising as an option. When you have multiple parties, like one party has 11% and another party might have 15%, blah, 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 do the people of Iceland expect their representatives to perhaps, rather than do warfare, because no one who's that small of a percentage can actually win, is there an expectation of more collaboration and cooperation? Because it's sort of necessary when you have multiple parties. I mean, what's the sense about that?
Well, yeah, that's a good question. So when the parties decide to work with each other and form government, I think the key word is sacrifice. Mm. You know, we have to sacrifice this and that and find common ground and make this work. Mm-hmm. The government must work, and you know, and there was a lot of people were trying to form government in a lot of different ways, and I think it was like five or six attempts to make a government. You know, mm-hmm. the left parties talked to the ones closer to the center. Mm-hmm. You know, and that didn't work out. The far right parties, you know, and then finally they made an agreement and they said, okay, we're gonna go for this. This might work.
Right.
This is like an opportunity for the small parties, like that hold very maybe innovative opinions, or like want to change just a tiny fracture of the society. They say, okay, hey, we got 8%,
mm-hmm.
but we are willing to support the government
mm-hmm.
if we get this thing done. And that could be like, I don't know, equal rights for men and women or you know, for...
So they might have one specific thing that is their bottom line or their highest priority. And they show up at the table and they're like, y'all know this is what we're interested in. So we want to work for this. Where do you need us to help you in your areas so that you will then be willing to help us with this?
Okay, that would be simplifying it a bit.
Just a bit.
A bit, yeah. But I think that having many parties, new ideas might come to reality more easily than in the U.S.
Right. Okay. So when it comes to collaboration in Iceland and the functionality, I love how you sound so aware and engaged. And I'm sure that that's partly because, in case my listeners don't already know, Iceland has a population of roughly 350,000 people. That is half the size of the city of Seattle. So I like to put that out there for people who are listening. Imagine if your entire country was half the size of Seattle. And obviously that has an impact on society, that in a country of 350 million, you're not necessarily going to be able to achieve. But in Iceland, you have traveled, you said, everywhere from New York, Spain, Denmark, Iceland, Romania, other places. You've got a pretty wide view. What do you think works best about healthcare in Iceland? Why do you think the people in Iceland have such a good supportive system?
I don't know. It has been like this for a long time. You know, this is what our neighbors are doing in the other Scandinavian countries. And this is just the idea, you know, well, help other people, be good. You know, and even if you don't need it yourself, you can, you know, you can help someone else, well, maybe one day I will need it. And it's very comforting to know that there is a security net there, you know. Mm-hmm. And I like that idea. But so I was living in New York for a few months. And the first thing I noticed in New York was a friend of mine called it the street psychos. We have like obviously mentally ill people, and no one feels responsible, or you know, maybe people feel responsible for them, but no one has the responsibility of just, you know, helping those people. And,
right.
And it's very sad to see, because I would never see this in Iceland. I would never see this in Denmark, Germany, and you know, in Europe. Well, okay, it's a broad statement, but people talk about the health care, you know, like there's a huge debate about it right now in the US, and they talk about like it's a bad thing, but mm-hmm. I definitely can assure, you know, this is one of the best things about living in Europe. Well, I very much hope that you will hold on to what you have already and not lose it like almost happened, you know, with Trump care or whatever you called it.
Yeah, I mean, what I find really fascinating is whether it's college education or whether it's healthcare, the people of the society can streamline it where they tax themselves and they convert that money 100% into providing the service. You just pay directly for college or you pay directly for healthcare, bam. But the current option we have includes this whole profit layer. And that's really why things are so much more expensive. If you're going to ask your young people to go to a bank and take out a bank loan and then go to school and then spend the next 20 years paying off that loan, in the end result, you got the same thing. A human being went to college and got educated. But in that system, this banking layer also generated a bunch of profit compared to a tax system where there wouldn't be profit being gained from it. So, and the same thing happens in healthcare. You know, the insurance agencies basically are making a tremendous amount of profit by adding themselves like an extra layer of frosting between two layers of cake. You know, the people want to get to the doctor and they say, sure, but first we have to profit off of it. I think sometimes we're so deeply mired in the current system, we can't step outside of it and actually see it very clearly.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I've noticed, so I watch a lot of US television. I, you know, do it over YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
And I've noticed that like socialism, that's considered a bad word.
Mm-hmm.
That's, you know, I'm no leftist and I'm no right, you know, I'm no right wing or left wing, but socialism, well, you know, it's just, in my opinion, it's just being to care. That's another word, to care for your neighbor, or you know, it's not a bad word. You shouldn't say, oh, he's a socialist. Now, what does that tell you about this person? You know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, in general, when I traveled to Denmark last year, what I found fascinating was every conversation I had literally with every person where I was asking them questions about what it was like to live in Denmark and blah, blah, blah. Everybody at some point in the conversation said to me, yes, but that's what we pay our taxes for.
Yeah.
And they said that with a sense of sort of ownership and awareness. And they're like, of course, we have these benefits that we enjoy, but we pay for them. That's what our taxes are for. In America, I don't feel like people have a sense that their taxes come back to them, which is part of why people are so upset. Your taxes are seen as just disappearing and going away. And no one has a sense that they ever really get a benefit. What do people feel like in general, if there's a casual conversation? Here's a good question. Do you guys have to file taxes yourself? Do you have to like hire a tax expert and pay your taxes, or does the government do that for you?
Well, I have to. My stuff is complicated, so I have to pay someone to do it. But most, you know, most people do it themselves.
Mm-hmm.
In Denmark, you just, and I think also in Norway, you just get a letter sent home to you and say, this is how your tax report looks like, and do you accept? And usually they say, yes, this is, you know, this is how it is. And I like that idea, you know, everything is transparent and, you know, you don't even have to make a decision or, you know, it's not your problem.
Right. In America, April 15th is usually tax day, and everyone starts to get nervous at the end of January when your tax letters start showing up in the mailbox. In February, people put it off, and then March, people start to get really anxious and they start stressing about it. And if you go to the tax people, like on March 15th, they'll say, you should have come a month ago. We're booked up. We may not have room for you. And there's this whole societal anxiety fest that happens every single year in late March and early April. It's like panic. And I found it fascinating that in Denmark, there, you don't even have to worry about it. Just done for you. Letter shows up. I thought, oh, the emotional relief or the lack of anxiety that generates is phenomenal.
And also the Norwegians, they take it a step further. And they, so if you want to look up your co-worker's salary, you can do so online. And you know that this goes for everyone, you know. There is no secrets there. And
well,
that's
a way of making sure that, how does that, what's the benefit or value pulled from that?
This will make the society a fair society, you know. No one is getting away with, you know, no bosses will get away with paying himself too much. This will help equality of men and women. So a woman would say, well, hey, you're paying a guy, you know, 20% more than you're paying me. Mm-hmm. What's up with that?
Right.
And the company would have to say, well, yeah, we will have to fix that.
Mm-hmm.
And so, well, my point is here, you know, it's kind of weird, and you know, your paycheck should, you know, I consider it a bit of a personal thing,
mm-hmm.
but I would say, you know, for the society, it's really healthy to have everything up on the tables.
Transparency, right.
Transparency, yeah. And that is going to happen in Iceland very soon. So the government bills will all be transparent. You know, and I think that will strengthen our government, and they will take more responsibility
mm-hmm.
on whichever step they will take. And I think this is like this in the U.S. There's a lot of transparency when it comes to government.
If you file, what's that called? There's this thing where basically you have to like file a request for the information. It's not like it's just broadly posted very often. So yeah, you have to fight for it.
Yeah, but my point is though, you can acquire this information, which means that the person at the other end somehow within the soul thinks, you know, well, I have to be responsible, you know, can I defend this action? And that's a very positive thing.
Right, because the government needs to be seen as, I've always thought of politicians as really servants, you know, civil servants, which is technically what they're supposed to be, but far too often they seem to be in service of themselves or their friends. And I think the more transparency, we need to get away from the tendency to have a combative relationship with our own governments, because if they really are ours, then everything should be transparent, because it's all our government, our money, our systems, right?
Yeah, but we can, you know, look at the our initial conversation, or you know, when we were talking about the new parties,
right?
The healthy thing of new people taking charge is that, you know, all the old lobbyism
mm-hmm.
does not apply to new people,
mm-hmm.
you know, so we are, it's like a computer that is running very slow, until you, you know, press the switch off button and switch it on again, and then it's, you know, back to normal.
Right, or it accumulates viruses over time, and you know.
Exactly, it's excellent, you know, and it's like somehow gets corrupt.
Yeah.
That's, you know, so the system we have in Iceland, well, at least we have the option of renewing quite easily.
Mm-hmm.
And if someone is doing something catastrophic, like last government, you know, they were really not doing what they... really not executing the will of the people.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we had brand new, like the pirates, I think they have 15 seats. No, they had 15%.
Right. Yeah.
And this Viðreisn, they had 11, so we have 26% there.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's 1/4. That is just really, you know, new blood.
Right. Well, on that note, really quickly, I'm going to go ahead and do a station identification to make sure people who have just joined us know who they're listening to. Hi, my name's March Twisdale. I am the producer and host of Focus On. And today I'm having a great time talking with, I'm going to have you say your name because I will say it wrong.
Johannes Benediktsson.
There we go, from Iceland. Before we return to the interview, I'd like to give a shout out to some folks who support Voice of Vashon. Minglement has since 1972 been Vashon Island's original natural marketplace, where owners, staff, and customers alike embrace the importance of natural, organic, and non-GMO food and products. Carrying a full selection of organic groceries, produce, prepared foods, supplements, tinctures, gifts, bulk teas, spices, and herbs, and conveniently located at center where the town of Vashon originated. Now, up in the current downtown, you can always drop by Vashon Market IGA. They also support Voice of Vashon. They're one block west of the main highway, where you can find everything from fresh produce to kids' specials, legendary meats, wine, spirits, and movies. They are open daily from 8 a.m. to 10 p.m. And so now we're going to get back to the interview, and let's dive sideways. In addition to how it affects politics, the closeness of your society or the interconnectedness of your society seems to have an impact on crime. Now, in the United States of America, we have some serious problems. I believe we have more people. Bernie Sanders talked about this a lot over the last year. There are more people imprisoned in the United States of America than there are in China, for example. So China has like three times our population and less people in jail. Prisons are a big for-profit industry in the United States of America, and a number of them are being built. Like, we're increasing our prison capacity in the U.S. Meanwhile, over in, I believe, Switzerland, they are so successful at helping people who have fallen into criminal activity for whatever reason to get healthy, to recover, and to re-enter society and not go back to prison later, but to stay as legal, successful citizens, that they're actually shutting down their prisons. And in Iceland, there's this really interesting thing that happens around why people are motivated to not break the law. So you want to talk a little bit about sort of what would motivate a person to make the right decision in Iceland?
I don't know. Just, you know, be a good person. What would motivate a person to not break the law?
Well, what happens when you do break the law and everyone finds out about it?
Yeah, okay, I see your point. So in Iceland we have a very small society, and if you break the law, everyone will know about it. And everyone, you know, so your reputation will be damaged for life. You know, for me, I would certainly not want that to happen, obviously. But like in larger communities, that won't happen, you know. But I think, though, that is not like the main force in why not break the law.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the reason for why not, for not breaking the law is just, you know, you just don't want to do it, you know.
So in Iceland, for example, when you look at crime in the United States of America, what we talk about is we talk about white collar crime and blue collar crime. So white collar crime is the wealth class, and very often they don't get caught. You know, they can be on Wall Street with, you know, five prostitutes snorting cocaine, and the police are not going to bother them in their fancy limousine. Whereas when you have poverty class people, they're committing crimes oftentimes because they don't see a way to succeed in their life or survive. And in Iceland, as you speak about, for example, this idea of helping each other out, and it seems to be a sort of a dominant cultural viewpoint, do you think that less people feel desperate in Iceland?
No, well, that's the point. You know, like I said it before, I'm not an extreme leftist and I'm not extreme rightist. But, well, when you have, like, when you pay taxes, part of it goes to help those people that need it the most. And so in the US, you have more extreme. You I don't know the tax percentage. It's 20, like 1% or 3. I don't remember it, but it's very low.
Mm-hmm.
And in Iceland, like I was talking about the people wandering the streets.
Mm-hmm. Right.
If I see someone like this, I call the police, and the police comes and puts it in an institution. And in the institution, it gets help.
Right.
Okay. I wouldn't say problem solved, but maybe we would. It is in some kind of a process. Okay.
Right.
But this person in the U.S., God knows where it's that person's. You know what it will do, and you know, and this goes. And I'm not talking about mental illness. I'm also talking about poverty, like extreme poverty. That goes unhelped in the US, and that doesn't give you very good result, you know. That is the reason, you know, the poor people, they need to live just like me and you, you know. They need to, you know, get food somehow and shelter, and you know, if they take alternative paths that might be illegal. The state will help those people before they get desperate.
Right. Like, literally, you were saying in Iceland that there, and I noticed this in Denmark, that there basically was no homelessness in Denmark. I walked all over the place. I tried to find it. The only people I could find, which was five total, and they were, like I said, they were summertime immigrants from Romania, was the information I was able to glean. And the woman I talked to, one woman I talked to about it, and I mentioned homelessness in America, and she says to me, she says, well, don't you have immigrants in America who are homeless? Like, we have these people coming in and they're just here temporarily and they don't have a place, so they sleep in the park or whatever. She says, you know, do you have that? And I said, actually, immigrants are hardly never homeless in America. Immigrants show up and they land with family, they start working, you know, that they almost always have something to do. It's Americans that are homeless in America. Yeah. And she says to me, what? I don't think I understood you. And I clarified, and she said, but that's not possible. I'm like, yes. Well, tell that to the thousands of people who are living in six homeless camps in downtown Seattle right now. Through the winter, they're living in tents, thousands of people in downtown Seattle. Everywhere you go, if you drive, if you walk three blocks, you will pass a couple of tents in a corner. Every block has one or two homeless people on it.
Yeah.
It's everywhere.
Yeah, well, so everyone has the right to dignity, and I think the government should always fulfill this right for everyone. Obviously, we will always have problems, but like in the US, it is very extreme, in like very extreme, compared to every place I have lived in. You know, I studied in Denmark for 3 years and I got free education there. You know why? I have no idea why they gave me free education, but they did.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm very happy about it. But you know, and maybe my taxes will give some Danish kid free education one day. I have no idea. But you know, Denmark of course has problems, but nothing compared to what is be on the other side of the Atlantic.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. All right, folks. So if you've just joined us and flipped on your dial, wondering what this awesome show is, and you want to be able to listen to the beginning of it, just go to voiceofvashon.org and check out Focus On, and you will be able to catch this show. Or you can go to my website, marchtwisdale.com, and I am currently right now speaking with, okay, say it for me.
Johannes Benedison.
There we go. That awesome dude. So let's see here. Before I go back, I want to give a little bit more appreciation to the people who make Voice of Vashon possible, such as Pandora's Box, located at 17321 Vashon Highway Southwest, Vashon Island's provider of quality pet foods, all that comes with over 100 years of combined knowledge and experience in pet care and pet nutrition. And you can ask for Bo. That's their store kitty cat. Also, if you're looking for a house on the island, John L. Scott is a founding underwriter for Voice of Vashon. They are the best people with the best results. Okie doke. So thank you so much, by the way, for being willing to sort of share your personal on the ground in these different countries perspective and for joining me today, taking time out of your day.
Well, mine is the pleasure.
Minus the pressure?
The pleasure.
Oh, the pleasure.
The pleasure and privilege. That's all mine.
Oh, well, thank you. So you said earlier that you're like a vacuum cleaner. I love your humor. I'll let you take it from there. So tell us a little bit about two things. First, Thor seems to matter. There's a lot of things like the Thor's gym. Right, that you have the picture of. And so I'm going to Iceland, by the way. I'll be there May 24th through the 26th. And there's all these Thor this and Thor that, which is a little curious about that. And then, of course, there's the original immigrants to the North American continent. So why don't you dive in and share some cool information?
Well, okay. So Thor, it's the Norse mythology,
mm-hmm.
And it's a god. And obviously, you know it from the comics, like Thor and Loki and stuff like that. But so this is a real name in Iceland, and it usually serves as a second name, but sometimes as the first name. So
really?
I know to, yeah, sure.
That's awesome. And,
yeah, it's pretty cool. And so do you know the show Game of Thrones?
Yes.
Yeah. So there's a guy there who is playing like a lifeguard or what's the word?
Yeah. He's basically a person who guards another person's life. Bodyguard.
A bodyguard, yeah.
Yes.
He is protecting the queen.
Mm-hmm.
And he is called the Mountain.
Mm-hmm.
So I was having him, he is an Icelandic guy, and I was having him in an interview.
Ooh.
And his name is Hafþór. But you know, Hafþór, that doesn't go very well. So he shortens his name into Thor,
mm-hmm.
you know, but everyone knows him as the Mountain.
Right.
Actually, so I asked him, have you seen these shows?
I watched like one series, 1 year worth. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I won't go into it, but it was a really fun interview.
Oh, I bet it was.
Thor is also, if you read the Icelandic sagas, and I'm like a huge fan of the Icelandic sagas, and I, you know, really like... that was the vacuum cleaner thing, you know. I just the stories I suck them into me like a vacuum cleaner.
Right, right.
Anyway, so I remember in one saga we have this there is this guy. His name is Hrólfur Mostraskegg, and he comes from Norway.
Uh-huh.
It's a really hard name to pronounce. Hrólfur Mostraskegg. You know, it's like it's like my mouth is filled with rocks.
Right.
You know? Anyway, so he's like a cheerleader, you know. He really likes this Thor, his god, you know. Mm-hmm. They all believe in Thor and Odin and Loki, and you know.
Right.
And he really likes Thor, and I read in this book, which is called Eyrbyggja, they talk about this guy's story, you know, like, just briefly, and on one page, they have 35 mentions, direct or indirect, mostly indirect.
Mm-hmm.
35 mentions to Thor.
Oh,
so,
wow.
You know, his name was Hrólfur, but he changed his name into Thor Olfur. He had a son, and he called him Thorstein. He had another son. I'll just call him Thorstein as well. And, you know, who are these son gonna marry? Well, there's a girl there. Her name is Thora.
Oh,
and he was just, he comes to Iceland and, you know, touches down close by Reykjavík and everything touches. Yeah, sorry.
So I just want to pull that history piece together. Because obviously the Vikings are related to Denmark as well. I went to Roskilde or whatever that town is pronounced properly as.
Okay.
And there's like a bunch of Viking boats there. There's a museum and stuff. So,
yeah.
So Iceland was basically at some point colonized by the Vikings. Is that how the? Because it's obviously not. It didn't originate in Iceland. It originated in I don't know, Scandinavia, and then it came to Iceland at a certain point.
The Vikings.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's similar to U.S. history. You know, those are just people. They were living mostly in Norway, but also in Ireland and Scotland and England and Denmark. And
on the coast, mostly.
On the coast, mostly on the coast, and they had this ruler. He was called Harald, the fair-haired. You know,
mm-hmm.
And Harald, he was the ruler of Norway, and he said, you know. I'm gonna conquer Norway and I'm gonna be the king. Some people did not like that,
mm-hmm.
and you know they said, well, we are not gonna be ruled by anyone. So you know, see you in next life.
Mm-hmm.
And they go, they you know take their ships, escape him, or just you know find better life in Iceland.
Okay.
So it's not necessarily colonized. So that would be a bit improper.
Right. No, I see what you mean. But they immigrated or they found
they
new land.
There.
Yeah.
But what happens next is kind of interesting because so we have those people in Europe that have found this island in middle of the Atlantic.
Mm-hmm.
And we have those guys, Vikings, and they go to Greenland. And it happens so that one boat gets blown off course and finds a new land, and it's North America.
Mm-hmm.
And people say, you know, that's Leif Erikson, but that's not correct. You know, Leif Erikson wasn't the first. The first guy was called Bjarni Herjolfsson, and he was aiming for Greenland. And Leif Erikson, he was an Icelandic/Greenland guy. Some people think he was Norwegian, but you know that's well, you're reaching very, very far if you claim that.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, so he hears this Bjarni Herjolfsson talk about this new land, and
mm-hmm.
and Leif goes and. Goes to find this new place, and we have his story, the story of Leif Erikson, and we have more stories, you know, and they are really interesting. And Leif Erikson, you know,
what year
don't get
was
me
this?
Wrong.
What year? Like
this
1100s?
No. So Leif is around 1000. But Bjarni is around 986, I think. But the most interesting guy, his name was called Karlsefni. So he goes, really, collects a lot of boats, and we are just gonna go there, and we are gonna live there, and and he collides with the people that already live there, the natives, and we have like a very interesting and detailed descriptions where they are doing business with the natives, and there's a bull that goes crazy, for some reason, and chases the natives into the woods, and a week later the natives they have gathered an army, and they just go on their canoes, and they're everywhere, and he uses the word, they are countless. And it's a super interesting story. And
So
a woman,
how far, just to give the listeners a sense physically, wait, how far down the coast, where roughly was this happening?
so it would be it was it would be a bit north of the state of New York,
Got it.
and a bit south of the border. It's like mostly Nova
Maine?
Scotia and that area.
Right.
But we would reach North America, the US, definitely. I'm gonna finish the story because it ends so in an interesting way.
Yeah.
There's a this Viking woman. She is saying, "What's wrong with you? You're all strong guys. And these guys, the natives, they are all so tiny. Why don't you? You're used to slaughter animals. Why don't you fight these guys?" And the Vikings, they're like, but look how many they are, we cannot, she says, she takes charge, and she runs into the woods and grabs a sword and rips off her clothes and presses the sword to her breasts and screams like a crazy person, and by doing so, the natives, they're like, okay, now what is going on? This is something we have never seen. And okay, guys, this is beyond comprehension. Let's leave now. And they run away. And by doing so, she saved these guys, Thorfinn Karlsefni and his crew. And so they leave North America. And the reason they say, okay, it's a great country, but the inhabitants, well, we would not be able to live next to them. They are not friendly. But on the way, an interesting thing though, on the way back, they pick up two Indian boys, and they ask them, or they just take them and bring them back to Greenland or Iceland. And they just ask them, so guys, they teach them how to speak Icelandic, and they ask them about the life in North America. And their story, is preserved in books in Iceland, for thousands of years. And
Wow.
that's amazing, And
And while all of that is recognized probably on the global level as being, this incredible piece of history, if you're growing up in this country, that is completely unmentioned and undiscussed if you are a child going to a US government school and learning about the history of Europeans discovering this side of the hemisphere. I mean, it's just
No,
not talked about.
believe me, this is so interesting. And I don't know, I could talk about this for hours. They describe the natives like they have like this crazy hairdo, and their eyes cannot be described with other words as than the mad eyes, broad cheeks, and they have this ritual. Like they have like a plant or something, and they rotate it above their head clockwise, but when they're angry, they rotate it counterclockwise.
That's a
And
lot of detail that these people picked up
no,
on.
that That's the beautiful part, you know,
Right.
and the craziest part of it all, that we have discovered that some people in Iceland have Native American DNA. Did you know this?
Genetic testing.
Yeah, genetic testing.
Right.
Show that there is some combination, you know, some relation to natives of North America, and that cannot be explained with other words. And you know,
so these are people who have like an entire Icelandic lineage, and they haven't, like, they didn't have anyone, you know, in the last 100 years come over from the U.S. And yet they find that genetically somewhere way back there, the genes came in.
Yeah. So 1,000 years ago, they were interacting with the natives.
Right.
And then again, 200 years ago.
Right.
But those genes go way back.
Right. More, they can more, check.
Yeah. So.
Yeah.
So, like, what bothers me is that this is so interesting. They're not even teaching this in Icelandic school, and they
really?
Should.
Why?
No. Well, I think, you know, we have like a very conservative approach to history, you know, and you should talk about this story and you should talk about that story. But we are so rich.
Yeah.
And, you know, and North America as well. Like, I'm telling you this story, and I think maybe 1 out of 10,000 knows this story or less.
Mm-hmm.
But this should be a part of, you know, the study, you know.
Yeah, I have. I grew up with a father who got a master's in the Middle Ages. You know, so he was a big history buff, and I've just always found history to be fascinating, and it's sort of like this incredibly missed opportunity where we have these truly fabulous and amazing stories that are sitting out there that are real, and yet we ignore many of them, and it is sad. It is sad.
Yeah. No, but you know, the culture, like, you know, someone decided at one point that this should be the history that is being taught in school.
Yeah.
But what bothers me is that the history we learn in Iceland is kind of boring. But we have there is so much spark
mm-hmm.
and flame in this history. And we can tell it in so interesting and alive way.
Mm-hmm.
Why don't we do it? You know?
I don't know. I mean, people read fictional books and they go to movies because they love stories, and they will stay up all night for 8 hours reading a story. You know, Harry Potter comes out and you've got, you know, 500 people lined up at midnight to buy a book, and they go straight home and they will stay up all night long reading that story. Humans love stories, and the human world of historical stories are just as fascinating if they're presented in a fascinating way. But you're right, there is a strange, in a way, I sometimes wonder if there is intention to make history boring so people will hate it. Because honestly, if people don't like history and they decide to ignore it, then they are so much easier to manipulate and trick into repeating history, because they're missing all this information.
Yeah, definitely. I completely agree. But, you know, who has the responsibility? You know, I would say the teachers. The teachers, they do know all of the story, and they have the power of telling the story and selecting the correct, or, you know, or selecting the fun part.
Mm-hmm.
But somehow they just stick to the safe part, to the traditional conservative histories. But then, you know, and we have like so much history written in Iceland, and, you know, the beautiful part, you know, so now we have the year 2017. I speak exactly the same language they spoke 1,000 years ago.
Right.
So when I read the old books, I don't need a dictionary to translate it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, you know, so 1,000 years of isolation,
mm-hmm.
well, preserved the language. And that's just, that's pretty cool.
That is...
That's,
No, that is really cool, because if I were to read something that was written 150 years ago, it has a totally different type of dialect. And if I'm looking at something from, you know, Chaucer, you know, I mean, there's things that people will say, is that really English? Because I only understand, you know, one out of every 15 words. So, it must be amazing to be able to literally realize you're speaking the same way that Leif Erikson and all those people were speaking.
Yeah, no, well, and I was thinking about it. Like, so now we are talking and I'm having a conversation with you. So when you read the book, you have a one-way conversation with the author. He is telling you a story. But thousands, you know, we can have this dialogue with a person that was living 1,000 years ago. You know, it's like a time machine, or I really get a sense of who this person was, and like tiny things, like when the person is describing other people, so they don't have the photos, so they have only words. They approach it differently. So they say, his nose. They have like 15 different ways of describing nose.
Right.
You know, what is this? The forehead is really small, and his nostril or
nostril.
The nostril is wider than average.
You know,
who on earth would describe another person like this in today's world? You would just show a picture.
In
different society, well, there were dangerous people wandering around, and some had like small foreheads and wide nostrils, or had some weird way of walking, and that was the only way you could identify that person. But, you know, so my point here is, so you have this one-way conversation to a very interesting person, but that has different values, different culture, and different approach to everything, but has the same toolbox in expressing those views. And that is the language I speak today.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful thing.
Yeah. No, that's a great point. That's a great point.
It is. And I feel so lucky, you know, and there are so many books, and, you know, we have...
I
could go on forever.
I know. So could I, but we are running out of time. You know what, though? We got through our laundry list.
We
got through everything. So thank you so much for joining me. So, hey, folks, we're just about out of time now. My name's March Twisdale. If you just tuned in, you've been listening to the tad end of my interview with, and how do you say your name?
Johannes Benedictsson.
There we go. Here on Focus On. This show airs at 11 a.m. on Sundays and 5 p.m. on Fridays. And I hope you will come check out my website, marchtwisdale.com, where you can also stream the show anytime you want to fit your schedule. And Johannes, thank you so much for joining me.
May I make one point to the people of Seattle?
Yeah.
So make sure to stop by Pandora's Box. They have quality pet food there. And I've been there, you know, and I tried the pet food, and it was really, you know, something. And John L. Scott. No, that's a great guy. So, you know, make sure to, you know, say hi to him. He is there. So, you know.
Somewhere on the island wandering around. Thank you.
It was so lovely to talk to you. And, you know, if you come to Iceland, I would be very happy to, you know, show you around.
Well, I am. I will be there in late May. So I'll email you the dates. I have 2 days that are roughly open, hoping to visit with people I've had on the show. So we'll have to see if we can make that happen. Folks, I'm going to leave you with a snippet of a song from an Icelandic band that I have fallen in love with called Of Monsters and Men. And I'll see you all at the next show. A lion heart.